Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and it's another bright and sunny day here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we've got a studio full today for you. It's going to be a great show, so I'm going to get right into it. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with Arthur Freeman, CEO and Executive Director of Chamblee Chamber of Commerce. Jared Degnan, how do I pronounce that?
Degnan,
all right. I always butcher someone's name.
Yeah, close.
The Director of Digital Strategy at Kellen Communications. And Chip Newton, Chairman of the Board of Directors for Aid Atlanta, Senior Manager, Deloitte Consulting. But first up, we're going to be talking with Jose Rodriguez Diaz, CEO of Aid Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Jose.
Thank you.
So did you bring Chip with you here to talk about this today?
Yeah, we're going to be co-challenging each other during this interview.
Well, that sounds absolutely great to me. Well, first of all, tell me a little bit about your guys' background and how you guys got into Aid Atlanta and what it's all about.
So I was just hired in January. January 1st was my first day. Came from New York. Worked for the government, for the Health Resources Services Administration, for 13 years as a senior medical consultant, and came down to run the largest AIDS service organization in the Southeast.
Awesome. Perfect, Chip.
Yeah, I've been recently elected as chairman of the board of directors. I've been on the board for about 5 years. I've been with Deloitte Consulting about 6 years, working their human capital group. We saw an opportunity to do a community impact pro bono engagement with the agency. And so we spent some time over the last 2 years working on a proposal for them, and we just completed an 8-week engagement.
That's huge. And we've had people on from Deloitte before, and you guys are all about giving back and contributing to the community, which is huge. So tell me, what is Aid Atlanta for our listeners out there?
So Aid Atlanta is the largest aid service organization in the Southeast. So we provide case management services, medical services, behavioral health services, and other supportive services for people living with HIV and AIDS and those affected and infected. So we're funded through the Ryan White CARE Act, as well as some private funding, state funding, CDC funding to do prevention. We also do HIV testing and counseling for over 7,000 people in the area, which is one of the largest in the state.
That is huge right there. And you've recently just become the CEO. It hasn't been too long, right?
Nope, just January.
All right, so how's that going for you, getting to run such a great organization? I mean, it's changing how many lives, I mean, daily, monthly, yearly. It's got to feel really good to be in your position right now.
No, absolutely. I've was very fortunate to be chosen to run this organization. And, you know, we service actively about 3,000 members who receive anything from case management to medical services. We have a large impact. We touch about 30,000 people in the area, as far out as Tennessee, Alabama, and the Carolinas, who come to receive services at our agency.
Definitely. Well, can you talk about a little the range of services for the people that don't know about it there? And you spoke about testing too. Also,
yeah, we receive funding from the CDC and other state and local organizations to help us provide free testing and counseling. So we provide HIV testing starting at noon through 7, Monday through Thursday, and on Fridays from noon to 5. It's a free service. You come in. It's a 20-minute rapid test. It's painless. It's just a little stick on the finger, or if you can't do that, we also have the oral test. We also provide testing throughout the community. So if you can't come to our agency, you could also look on our website or call us up, and we can tell you where we are on the weekends or in the evenings.
So I'm sure you guys are also doing stuff just to spread awareness about this as well. What are you guys doing out in the community for that?
So we do a lot of health events and community health events, as well as we will be at the underground and other locations. We also have the AIDS Walk that's coming up October 19th. It's the largest walk in the Southeast. About 10,000 people participate. Last year we raised over $1 million.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. May 1st, I mean, we have our website up, the AIDSWalk, .org. So, you know, teams sign up, and we also provide services throughout the community for our case management. Our case managers are located throughout 17 areas, and we provide services to 24 counties.
That is huge right there. Chip, so what's Deloitte really doing in this process, and how are you guys really helping them out?
Sure. So there's a, you know, obviously the board has a strategy that's, you know, goes for 3 to 5 years, and the current strategy was to transform the agency from specifically being a grant-funded wholly, like about 70% grant funded agency, to be more of a traditional patient revenue model. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we chose to help them with this is because it's this model that's more holistic in its care, and it's this model that has better outcomes for patients.
Okay.
So what we really wanted to do was help create the real business plan behind that strategy. So that included all the financials that are associated with that. It included looking at their organizational structure and determine which roles don't they have now and how should they incorporate those or acquire those, that different type of talent. And it also looked at their partnerships. So it was a cross-functional effort with our audit group, and our strategy and operations group and our human capital group. So it was a pretty big engagement for us. It was one of the largest ones in the U.S. markets this year.
Well, that's huge right there. And you're really working out all the logistical stuff for them so they can go do what they do best and go out and help people. You're just making sure everything works together properly.
Right. We were trying to provide them something that, instead of just being an assessment and a bunch of recommendations, provide them with operationalized tools so that they could take what we provided and start executing on it.
And they can grow a lot more organically.
Yeah. The plan at currently, the financials that we produce, the forecasting financials that we produced, will double the size of the agency in 3 years.
Wow, that's huge.
Which means we can service more people.
Exactly. Right? So how are you guys getting the word out to these different people there? Because I know a lot of people that they're scared to go get the test. They don't want to know. But and there's a lot of support that goes with going through this process as well. How are you guys really getting that out and getting these people together to help them?
So, I mean, our new message is that, Aid Atlanta is really trying to provide primary care services.
Yeah.
So it's not just for individuals living with HIV and AIDS. We also want to be able to support those that are in high risk or those who are looking for a supported space to come and get care. Our expanded services will include primary care. We have our infectious disease. We have our new medical director, Dr. Africa Alvarez, who runs our infectious disease and our primary care area. We have we'll soon have psychiatric services, OBGYN, and adolescent medicine. So on top of all of the services that we currently provide, our plan for expansion and for sustainability is to also provide those types of services that the community needs outside of the HIV and AIDS care model.
That's huge right there. I can imagine anyone that's engaged with you guys, their quality of life is probably a lot better mentally and also physically, because I mean, you guys really help them live with this.
Correct.
And the quality of life nowadays where it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, it's a lot better now.
Well, it's a chronic illness. The CDC a couple of years ago reclassified it from a crisis illness now to just a chronic disease. We have one of the largest one of the best care models where we have 82% of our clients are non-detectable, which is a great number when
That's
you look
huge.
At the average, when you look at the average number across the nation. So with that, we felt that we were able to expand our service, and we have a great chronic disease model, of care, where we're able to move them through that continuum and help them achieve sustainability and self-sufficiency.
It's huge. Well, what does the 2014 outlook really look for you growth-wise, and what are you guys really planning to do? What events are you guys doing? And I know you mentioned the walk.
So. Yeah. So we have coming up on June 21st, we have the Cotillion, which is a large event for us, one of our largest fundraisers. But in general, we, in the next couple of months, we will be opening our health center, which will be providing all of these holistic and wraparound services. July 1st, we'll have our standalone pharmacy right in our building, the Aid Atlanta Pharmacy, where we'll be able to provide both retail and 340B pricing medications for our patients and people in the community who want to come and support us. We look to double in size between now and the end of 2015. And to be able to expand our behavioral health model and expand our primary care model along with all the other services as a big wraparound delivery service model under one roof.
So what effect have you guys seen being in Georgia, the decrease or increase of HIV in Georgia? Have people become more aware and it's decreasing or?
No, it's not decreasing.
I think it's not decreasing.
No, we're seeing increases in young people, especially in the Latino population and in women. We're still struggling with the message. So our job is, and what we're looking to do with some of the reinvestments is to kind of redefine some of those messages as it pertains to our culture and the people that live in the communities that we serve.
I think Georgia is number 6 in the country for the highest infection rate.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that at all.
Georgia, I mean, Atlanta alone, it sits in the top three.
Yeah, Atlanta alone does. And that's important because in order for, you know, the model that we helped create for the for them, for that to really work, you have to go where the epidemic is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that means it's not strictly in Fulton or DeKalb, right? It's often in other counties that are, you know, subordinate counties to the major metropolitan area.
Well, what's the best way to really spread the message and make sure that we can try to get this rate down? Because I feel like, at least growing up, for my generation as a millennial, I felt like there was a lot of information thrown at me. And I mean, you know, teenagers and young adults, I mean, we're very hormonal creatures.
Correct.
And we don't always think with, especially guys, don't always think with our head. But
that's the problem. Right there. and all, you know, young people are invincible. I mean, they just feel as though they're immortal. Their life will never end. But not that we're saying that HIV and AIDS is a death sentence, because it's not.
No, it's not.
We have a lot. But I think, you know, the message for us is know your status. You know, understand where you are and what your status is, because that will help us. Because, unfortunately, at Atlanta, we get a good number of individuals come at late stage when it's already too late to help them. Not too late, but they're at very, very late stage in the disease. So we use a lot of resources to bring them back to good health. So there are, in this area, there's still a lot of people that just are walking around not knowing their status and come into care when they're very, very sick.
Is there no way to know, like, physical symptoms to know, or do you actually have to go out and take the test?
I think, you know, it's best that you just, you know, just go and get tested, and
right.
You know, because everyone's symptomology is going to be different.
Okay. I know recently on the radio I've been hearing about an in-home test for mm-hmm. HIV. That seems like a big step in the right direction.
Correct. So. Yeah, we provide it. That in-home test is the test that we provide. It's a 20-minute rapid test, little prick on the finger, little drop of blood, just like if we were to do a glucose test for diabetes. Put three little drops of a solution, and in 20 minutes we know what your status is.
Okay.
We also, I mean, if you're scared of needles, we could also do the swab, you know, around your gum, same amount of time, 20 minutes.
Do you think this in-home test, because a lot of people are really private, they don't want to go to a doctor or anything, do you think this is really going to help and really increase the awareness? Because I'm sure this is spreading a lot because people don't realize that they have it.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe it will. It's been around, you know, for some time. We're just starting to see that it's being marketed more. Now there's a new hepatitis C rapid test as well. That's not an in-home test. You have to come to a medical facility. But that's the next epidemic that we're seeing a lot of is Hep C.
Okay, that's huge. So what's next for you guys? What's the outlook? Do you see us curing HIV or AIDS anytime soon? I know that's what we're going towards. Yeah. But I mean, medical advances, I mean, they're becoming exponential, really. So.
Not for a bit. I think we still have a while to go. The virus has mutated in so many ways that it's difficult to just nab one. Just similarly to the flu virus, et cetera, that, you know, that evolves over time. We have to be ahead of the curve with it,
yeah.
And I think that's our challenges at the moment.
So I'm sure that you guys have some heartwarming stories just for our listeners out there, just to show sort of how you've impacted some different people's lives and how AID Atlanta has really changed and saved some people's lives. Can you tell me maybe one or two of those stories? Or
yeah, recently I actually had heard a story of this person who went to his doctor for a normal checkup. Doctor called him up and told him he had to come in, you know, urgently. He kind of had a feeling of what it was, but didn't know. So he came to our site to get tested and met up with one of our caseworkers. And that caseworker really helped him kind of understand his process and such. And now he's doing very, very well. He's on treatment. He's supporting the agency very much so. His emotional state, we help him with his, you know, with what we call emotional wellness services. And he's really evolved as an individual and is doing a lot of advocacy work for us in the community and also some fundraising and such. And he's been volunteering for the community for some time. And we have plenty of stories.
Oh, I can imagine. I bet if you go on the website, you guys have some testimonials that people can definitely look at. And I think you bring up a really great point there, that a lot of the doctor's offices don't – just the emotional impact of this is probably the worst thing on somebody, that it can really – it can make them become a recluse. It can just completely tear down the whole life they've built up. And that's the most important thing to sort of come back from.
Well, it's all surrounding stigma. It's a stigma that people have towards HIV and AIDS. And, you know, and that stigma carries – a huge burden for individuals who are by themselves or who are, you know, who live in a culture or in a community like the religious community
Latino
community, et cetera, that don't see this as a favorable or support them.
Sometimes they look at it as a curse or this or that.
Correct. So. Or that they deserve it and that this is a burden, you know, a wrath of God coming down on them because they've done something so wrong.
So I can just imagine having a community around you like Aid Atlanta and get to meet people that are like you and they're sharing your struggles is a huge thing for these people.
Absolutely. We have, 100 employees that are very dedicated to this cause and they people know when they walk in through the doors that there's no prejudice or no bias towards their status, both negative and positive. You know, we get individuals who come in frequently every 3 to 4 months and get tested because they're at high risk. And those individuals we treat just the same.
So this is always a big issue for everyone. People are very heartfelt and they want to help people out with this. How does the community get involved with Aid Atlanta? What can they do to help you guys out? Do you want more volunteers? Do you need more money? I mean, probably some of both.
All of the above.
All of the above.
So, but well, money's always a
really,
big thing.
Really, what's the best way for them to do this? Because I know if you would just walk through down someone on the street and you talk to them for 5 minutes, if they had a quick button they could press on their phone and donate $5, it'd be a no-brainer.
Well, so. Our website, www.aidatlanta.org, they certainly can give. And we also have two groups. One is called the Red Ribbon. Mm-hmm. The Red Ribbon group are young professionals who would like to donate to the agency from $600 a year. And the Red Ribbon members meet on a quarterly basis and they gather for different events and they try to recruit other members. And we're still looking for members to join the Red Ribbon. And we also have the Loop, which is the Loop is our higher 1500 or 12, excuse me, 1200 and above annual giving, and there's a platinum level and such. So all of that can be found on our website, and we also have our cotillion on June 21st, our AIDS Walk, which is on October 19th, and we are soon planning a golf tournament. Yep. We still don't have the date, but we are, Deloitte is one of our key members, and they're putting a good team of golfers together for that event.
So say you. We'll see about that.
We'll see. But we, they can get involved in many ways, either by giving money, which is always obviously fantastic, but we always need volunteers as well.
Yeah, I would say from a business community perspective, one of the things that is really valuable that I think a lot of corporations don't take advantage of with organizations like this is providing their employees an outlet to provide skills-based volunteerism to agencies like Aid Atlanta.
Yeah.
So they need things like management training. They need things like training on software. And that's easy stuff for the business community to pull together. There's not a lot of prep work for them. And the agency is more than willing to accept that type of training or volunteerism. So that's an area that I would say, definitely. And then, the cotillion, I'll say, it's one event. One of our big sponsors is Delta Airlines, and it's going to be in their new air museum.
Okay.
I think we're the first event, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That they're having since they just remodeled it. So that'll be a great event on June 21st. So anybody that wants to go to that should go to the website and check it out.
Yeah, and I echo what Chip's saying, that in the business community, we do welcome them to participate and give us some of those types of trainings. And because as we're going through our transformation in 2014, it'll be important for us to understand and learn some other business models out there that we may benefit from.
Well, I also know a lot of businesses out there, they actually offer give back programs to their employees. Are you guys on any of those kind of lists where the employees get to give back to their favorite charities? Are you
sure?
Guys,
actually, one real big one, United Way, right? So, you can do a payroll deduction for United Way. There's a bunch of campaigns, and you can allocate it to whatever nonprofit you want. So there's a really easy, simple way to do that.
Yeah, and the Community Health Foundation
definitely.
As well. Yeah.
And it sounds like you guys want to get in front of more large corporations, too, to have them be able to offer these services.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we also, welcome sponsorships to any of these events and activities that we're doing and throughout this year.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming
and sharing your message.
How do people reach out and contact you guys and donate or find out where your events are?
Sure. So they can go to our website, which is www.aidatlanta.org. They can contact me, Dr. Jose Diaz, at 404-870-7720, or my email is also on the website.
Right. And you contact me. I'm happy. It's Chip Newton, no spaces, at Deloitte.com.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Love what you guys are doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Jared Deganon. I've messed it up again. I told you.
Let's just go with Jared.
Jared, there we go. with the Director of Digital Strategy at Kellen Communications. Again, sorry for butchering your name.
No worries. All, time.
All right, tell me a little bit about what you do, how you got into your role, and how you got with Kellen.
Sure. So my role as Director of Digital Strategy is across all of our clients. Kellen Communications is an over 50-year-old communications group that serves primarily issue advocacy and cause marketing. Okay. We work with some of the largest Fortune 100 companies through various associations. We go to bat for industries including food and beverage, airlines, construction. We really work across verticals. And our main goal is really to kind of unite the issue advocacy portion of things, which include public policy as well as consumer perception and then B2B marketing.
Okay. Well, talk a little bit about the issues that are really coming up that you guys are attacking.
So right now, I think in the last year or so, the online space has shifted dramatically.
It's huge, yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people may have realized this when they just go to Google. They realize that search has changed, especially with what they're seeing and how the various websites come up in search. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're seeing is that Google implemented something last year called Hummingbird.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people. But the fact of the matter is that Google's been in this death battle with online, I guess, online spammers, for lack of a better term. And so Google tries to bring the most relevant content to the forefront.
Yeah.
And whereas the search engine optimization battle has always been about technical mm-hmm. aspects. It's now about content and it's about context.
And that's huge.
And one of the things that our clients are coming to us with is they're saying, you know what? We can't just have a website strategy. We can't just have a social media strategy. We need to have an online strategy.
Yep.
We need to be able to get our information in front of our clients, our prospective audiences, and no longer can we view that in silos.
Well, I love that right there. And you're right. It used to be back in the day, you're like, well, how do I get the top of Google? All right.
Yep.
Well, you hire these guys in India
mm-hmm.
and they're going to – and you magically pop up there. You pay them some money and you magically pop up there. But right now, it really is all about content. It's about the user. It's about me. If I want to type in hummingbirds, blue hummingbirds, I want to find the most relevant content on blue hummingbirds.
Exactly. And a lot of that is influenced by the people that you connect with online. So everyone's search results are going to be unique. And as, you know, whether you're a B2B entity or a B2C entity, over 90% of purchase decisions right now are being made with online information. When you couple that with the fact that half of that traffic is coming from natural search, the implications are really, really clear. You have to have a strategy. You have to have that information in front of the customers. And, you know, a friend of mine was talking about it earlier. If at this point in time, if you have to have your customers search for you, you've almost lost the battle.
Exactly.
Because you have to have that information right there when you need it, whether it be mobile, desktop, or social media.
And you bring up a good point there, too. And I know we're talking mainly B2B, but also B2C, the consumer's a lot more intelligent. If you go to buy a car mm-hmm. nowadays and they're trying to sell you all this different stuff, guess what? It takes me, 30 seconds to Google everything you're saying and then say, well, this car company over here is going to offer me this deal. And, I mean, it's putting a lot more power in the consumer's hands. And like we said, we're more educated consumer.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very exciting realm, especially for B2B organizations. The fact of the matter is that everybody's online.
Whether yeah.
You
have some presence.
From construction to cause advocacy, community groups. And the fact of the matter is it's about knowing your audience. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I think that a lot of online marketers get wrong is the fact that they don't really think about that one-to-one sale. They think of it as mass communication. And it is mass communication
yeah.
To a certain extent. But at the same time, would you speak to someone one-to-one the same way that you put out your tweets or you put out your Facebook posts? A lot of times it's absolutely ridiculous. It sounds like we're just sending messages
yeah.
out into the void and crossing our fingers and hoping it works.
Well, and also it's hard to really – used to be you could really measure it. You're like, all right, here's our sales funnel.
Mm-hmm.
We put it in here. Here's our ROI. But with digital marketing, the ROI is completely changed, and it's like, well, mm-hmm. what's the power of a tweet? Well, we're building a relationship, and that's going to lead back to this, but it's hard for me to show you how the direct ROI from that is or from my digital media presence. So that's a huge problem, isn't it?
I
wouldn't say problem, but
there's pros and cons. In every case, I mean, especially in consulting, you, the answer to every question is it depends. The fact of the matter is that if you know your audience enough, if you use online data, you're able to identify the steps that either a customer or a consumer is going to take in order to use that online information to make a purchase decision. And the interesting thing about the online space is that now these conversations that used to be completely invisible to us, where we were just guessing at it, they're now transparent. We can see those conversations, or at least a small snippet of it. And the fact of the matter is that we can now take metrics and align them for the activities online. You can measure how many people are talking about a particular product or issue. You can measure how many people are going from that conversation to resources like social media pages. You can measure how many people who go to those social media pages ultimately click through to your website. And ultimately, it's about what you need to set up and what you need to align your website effectively in order to measure that final stage of the game, whether it's making a donation or a lead or even, you know, within e-commerce, which is pretty easy. But
yeah, e-commerce is definitely pretty easy. I think the thing that people are still struggling with is the people that do all that research, and then I go out to Macy's and I go purchase the item. And if we could get that last step in there, I think that could be huge for these. I know a lot of businesses fight against this. I know it's hard to explain digital media marketing to a lot of these older companies, I can imagine.
Well, I mean, I think you're seeing the rise of a lot of new and exciting technologies. And when you combine it with the, you know, the ever-present big data, there are some very exciting opportunities. But also some very big challenges for marketers. There's a new technology out there called iBeacon, or you know, geolocation marketing, where you walk into a store and all of a sudden it serves up some sort of offer that's tailored for you, which is great for the consumer, but it's a little bit scary. And it's also very complex. You know, the last thing you want to do is guess wrong and provide provide a customer with something they completely don't need. I mean, you hear,
or it's something that creeps them out. They're like, "Well, I didn't want you to try to sell that to me."
There's, you know, there's a classic story about somebody who receives all this baby-oriented stuff in the mail. And the fact of the matter is that that was culled through data from their online searches. And suddenly they realize, oh my gosh, they're pregnant.
Exactly. So how do you go? What are the questions that these companies should be asking the digital marketing agencies that they're trying to hire? Because it really is a wild west right now, and everyone, this is like the space that it's like, well, I don't have a degree in this, but everyone's really attacking this at the same time. So you have all these different companies, oversaturation. How do you find the right company?
I think that what you're looking at is, number one, what company knows your audience? You know, looking at that online data, understanding what role online media plays in that ultimate purchase decision, and how are they measuring that? You know, you made the great point about ROI. A lot of agencies still struggle with ROI. You know, one of the things that I think Kellen does really, really well is we're able to unite the different data streams, whether it be online conversations, website traffic, search data, traffic data, Google AdWords data, and Webmaster data, all together to really give a 360-degree idea of how the customer thinks about, talks about, and then ultimately makes decisions online.
Definitely. So, what advice would you give to someone that wanted to get into this agency, if they wanted to work with Kellen or somebody? What for these young kids coming out of school? I mean, this is a great opportunity for them. What should they know? What should they learn? How do they attack this?
I think they should definitely think about what is it that they're good at. You know, if I interview guys and they're saying like, "Oh yeah, I'm great at social media." And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm great at using the phone too. It's social media is a channel like any other. And the challenge that I have is finding talent that is curious enough to go out and use social media in various ways. Kellen, we really pride ourselves on hiring some really very talented individuals that not only know the channels really well, the technical side, but also know people and know salesmen. In fact, I find that salesmen are usually some of the best social media marketers out there because they don't take anything for granted.
That's true. Well, and also, I mean, you bring up a good point. Social selling has become one of the new buzzwords in the last couple years, and a lot of people don't really understand it, but I think you bring up a good point. A salesman can use Twitter to build a relationship, then take it off of Twitter and continue that relationship. It's not about, well, that person followed me back.
Exactly. I mean, I think that I actually spent the last 2 days at a Digital Summit here in Atlanta, and for the most part, it was a really good good conference. The challenge was is that two central examples were brought up time and time and time again. First of all, it was the Oreo Super Bowl tweet, and the second was the Arby's hat exactly during the Grammys. The fact of the matter is, those are great. Those are great tweets. Those are great examples of consumer engagement. The question that I had for some of the folks who were involved in that is how do you track to an actual relationship with a customer? I mean, unless you're aligning your social media apparatus with your customer relationship team, unless you're able to really connect those two together, you're making a big splash, but you're not capturing these guys. And how are you supposed to reapproach them?
Well, and you bring up a really good point. We actually had the right after that tweet got done, we had one of the head guys over at Arby's. He was in the studio. Turned out that there was an intern at home that saw it and decided to do the tweet, and he was running their social media for them. They were really proud of him and happy. But again, it was an intern that didn't have not paid by the company that actually went out there and did that. It wasn't a marketing strategy that they came up with themselves. So it was
You know, I think one of the best examples that I saw at Digital Summit was actually Mercedes. They were introducing the new CLA from last year, first Mercedes under $30,000. And one of the things they did was they did this great influencer marketing campaign through Instagram. And not only was it a huge success from an awareness perspective, but also it translated into some of the highest sales Mercedes has seen in like over 10 years.
They almost got my fiance. So.
almost. But the fact of the matter is that shows a really great knowledge of the not only the knowledge of the space, but also knowledge of their consumer.
Yes.
And I think that that is paramount. If you can say that you know your customers so well to be able to provide them with the information that is necessary in order for them to make a purchase decision, you're golden.
Well, and also, is Mercedes being forward-thinking enough to say, you know what, we have all these older people that are buying Mercedes, but we don't have any young people to come in to be lifelong Mercedes owners, so let's make that, let's market to them. So that was really good. So how is Kellan setting themselves apart from all these other players in the game, and what makes you guys different?
Well, you know, for the last 50 years, we've really worked with anybody from Coke to Pepsi to some of the sugar manufacturers to construction industry. And the challenge that we've been receiving from these companies is don't just talk on a a product basis, talk on an industry basis. So we go to bat for them, whether it be in the construction industry, the aerospace industry, airlines. And so what we end up doing is have to fight a lot of really interesting battles. So the way that Kellan is positioning itself going into 2014-2015 is that we're really hanging our hat on our ability to break through the noise. It's not just about it's not just about fighting that big huge awareness fight, but it's going in and it's talking to influencers, really relying on our ability to create content in-house and then using that to power stuff outside of the environment. And it's a very exciting time for agencies. And I think that Kellan, between our content capabilities and our tracking capabilities and our measurement capabilities, our clients are just absolutely loving it, and they're wanting more and more.
Well, it's just a one-stop shop. You guys create the great content for them. They don't have to do anything. Then you can show them how that content is tracked back and how it relates to them making money. And you just make it easy. It's a no-brainer for these companies.
Exactly. A big core component of all of our campaigns. It's number one, monthly metrics. So we look at number of followers, number of tweets, number of engagement. But then we go one step deeper and we go to key performance indicators, which really affect the awareness, interest, desire, and action numbers. How are you getting a customer, again, from that point of completely not being familiar with the industry or completely having one particular opinion to actually changing their opinion? And we measure that all across the different touch points.
Well, I think that's some of your secret sauce right there, because a lot of the companies are on the surface level. Oh, here are your metrics, but as we all know, those can be slanted a little bit if you wanted just how many tweets or how many followers, definitely. Mm-hmm. So I think what's the number? It's like 46% of people on Twitter aren't actual real users right now.
Exactly. You've got a lot of noise, a lot of bots on there.
And you guys just get right through that.
Exactly. And the same thing you can say for Facebook. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Facebook came out with the news that there was a ton of spam that they just cracked down on, fake user profiles. And when it comes down to it, those vanity metrics just don't work.
No.
You really have to be able to, you know, put a little bit of that statistical analysis that, large CPG companies or, large B2B companies have been using for decades for lead management to really understand what's working and what's not. We implement that on a day-to-day basis
You guys have been through the whole process, so you have the track record, and you guys actually are really good marketers. So when you get in the digital marketing space, it's just the same thing, just learning the new tools.
Exactly. Especially having some of the influencers that we do. We have registered dietitians on staff. We have scientists on staff. So the content that we create is really meaningful.
And you understand the businesses you're creating the content for, and you understand how they work.
Exactly. Some of our clients have been with Kellan for 30, 40 years. So it's really exciting to continue to grow with them and to evolve and to continually serve their needs.
That's huge. Well, what's next for you guys in 2014, and how do our listeners reach out and contact you guys?
We've got a new product coming out called Online Brand Visibility, which is a holistic look at a brand's online footprint, everything from their website to social media to their influencer relations. And we're currently in beta testing for that right now.
Okay.
We have a couple more spots left open for brands who want to kind of involve themselves. I think we can offer some preferred pricing. And anybody who's interested can contact us at kellencommunications.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on.
Well, thanks so much.
All right. Last but definitely not least, we have Arthur Freeman, the CEO and Executive Director of Chamblee Chamber of Commerce. He's been sitting there patiently taking notes. So now we got the grand poobah in the house. Welcome to the show.
So I have a question to ask. What do you give a 106-year-old city as a gift?
That's a tough one. I'm bad at giving gifts to anyone. As they know, I always take them out to a nice meal. So I don't think you can take a city out to a meal.
And in this case, it's a chamber of commerce.
That's perfect. I like that.
People generally hear the term Chamber of Commerce, but I don't think very many people, particularly when we're in the millennial generation, really know what a Chamber of Commerce means or stands for.
It just sounds really fancy.
Actually, if you go back to 1589, the first chamber was created in France in a little village, and it was the merchant class that was between the serfs and the royalty of the castle that felt that they were left out of the mainstream. And so they formed their first chamber of commerce, as we know it today. But it wasn't quite what we do today. They actually had a chamber, and if you were a merchant or a business person who wasn't behaving properly, they took you into the chamber. And you came out and revitalized and belonged to the society.
Well, things have changed, I hope.
It changed a little bit. It changed in 1768 when the New York City, which, of course, was before we were a country, formed a chamber. And that was basically to protect against the British.
Okay.
And that was for the fledgling businesses that were starting. The United States actually adapted a Chamber of Commerce in 1912, and it came about under a very interesting set of circumstances. President Taft was having a difficulty with labor unions and the labor union movement, and at his speech in December of that year, he asked for businesses to step up and assist him encountering this new wave of unionism.
Okay.
And so 3 months later, they formed the United States Chamber of Commerce, and they took the site where Daniel Webster used to live, and they put up this incredible building with this Greek Doric columns and facade. And today, that's what a chamber means. It's that nice, beautiful building in Washington, D.C. on Daniel Webster's property.
Tell me about the Chamblee Chamber, what really sets you apart from the other chambers and what you guys are doing differently.
Well, the Chamblee itself is what is unique, and that is it being a 106-year-old city. It initially formed back in the Southern traditional days. And in 1948, the United States, after World War II, formed a refugee program. And they were looking in metropolitan areas in the United States where they could place, in that case, about 200,000 Europeans who were displaced during the war. Yeah. And they picked the area that is the Tri-Cities area, Brookhaven, Chamblee, and Doraville.
Okay.
And they started sending folks over there. Over the years, and program, by the way, is still in existence today, the American, the U.S. Refugee Act, we had many other waves of immigration that were resettled into the area. We had the boat people from Cuba. We had the Vietnam War. We had unrest in Africa. We had unrest in the Ukraine and Russian areas and all the rest of it. So all of these folks, ultimately, to a very large extent, wound up being placed in the Tri-City areas. So we refer to ourselves as the salad bowl.
Well, it does explain why there are some great European restaurants. There's a lot of great restaurants in Chambly, and they're some of the best, and they're known as the hole-in-the-wall restaurants for different cultural foods.
It's fascinating because there are approximately 35 languages spoken in the home and 17 languages spoken in daily commerce in the city of Chambly.
So that probably makes the Chamber of Commerce really a unique Chamber of Commerce compared to all the other ones in Atlanta.
There's nothing like us in actual fact, because we're having to deal with so many different cultures, so many different traditions. What's even more interesting is how the population has shifted over the years. Right now, we are approximately 51.7% Spanish-speaking. Mm-hmm. And about 7.8% Asian, as the two major languages and the two major refugees, if you will, that mm-hmm. have come to the area. And this means that you have the southern traditional populace, if you will, that lives primarily in the northern part of Chambly. And then you go over the railroad tracks to the southern part of Chambly, and you have 35 languages to deal with.
So tell me a little bit about the economic development you guys have in Chambly right now. What's going on? What's big, and what's going on in Chambly?
Well, the biggest thing going on right now is the millennials. They represent almost 50% of the new population moving in. They're moving in primarily because of logistics, where it's located.
Is it cheaper? And it's
cheaper. It's got all this diversity.
Yeah.
And then you got the situation that we are the only city to have the second busiest airport in Georgia, which
okay.
is Peachtree
the
Cab.
That. Did not know that.
Very few people are aware of that. And just anecdotally, with CDC being in Chambly,
yep.
infectious division disease, they have anywhere from 10 to 15 flights coming in and out every single day. The airport actually reserved the hours of 2 a.m. in the morning to 6 a.m. in the morning for incoming and outgoing medical flights, specifically for the CDC, because they're coming from all over the world with whatever they're bringing for investigation.
No one would know. Everyone's all talking about the new club Jay-Z put in Hartsfield Jackson, but no one knows about this. They're not talking about the important stuff. So,
that helps tremendously in terms of bringing in a high technology, a high health type situation. We are faced as a chamber with how do we get our workforce educated so that we can start delivering the level of services, usually the support services. We're not talking to doctors
yeah.
and, mm-hmm. and the high end, but the support services available so that they can continue to expand into the various fields.
Well, let's talk education for a second. I know you have a lot of different schools. I know you have at least one college in Chambly. Talk a little bit about the education there and maybe some of the reform you guys are doing there.
The Interactive College of Technology right now has about 1,500 students representing about 22 countries. And they are trying to develop in a two-year program the technical skills, technical support skills from the maintenance and the networking and the support services. They are also having classes that deal with the overall support services, you know, like HVAC, things like
mm-hmm,
that
yeah.
electrical, plumbing, yeah. that are all
stuff
required.
You can actually go out and get a job with,
right.
a degree you can actually go get work.
Chambly High School is a charter school.
Okay.
It and a school in Brookhaven called Cross Keys have the highest graduation percentage and the highest scholastic percentage coming out of the entire state of Georgia.
Wow. That's huge.
And that's a public school system. And it competes, of course, with – we have a lot of private schools in the same general
mm-hmm.
area.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've been very blessed by having an ongoing type of workforce education program that now entices IT-type businesses and health-type businesses to start looking at Chambly as a home.
Okay, so you guys are doing all that. How are you guys really playing in the community? What do you guys do? Just I know with all those different cultures in there, I mean, community is a huge piece of that puzzle. What are you guys doing in the community with the Chamber of Commerce?
Well, the biggest problem we have as a community and as a chamber is breaking through the cultural walls.
Yeah.
So we've reached out and formed alliances with the different chambers of commerce that are specialized within those communities. We've reached out to community services organizations that are servicing that community, CPACS being one of them, which is the Center for Pan-Asian Community Services. We also work with the Latino American Association. We work with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And we work with the Chinese and Taiwanese chambers of commerce because we don't speak the language, obviously. Yeah. And so by putting this group together, Little Chamblee, if you will, has become a hub for the area. And that area is referred to as the Buford Corridor.
Definitely.
So the salad bowl.
So what's next for you guys? What's the outlook for 2014? What are you guys doing?
Well, for 2014, we are looking at two things. First is the, again, talking as a tri-city for the moment, the automotive plant that has been dormant in Doraville for 8 or 9 years now is supposed to have a deal inked by August of this year.
Wow.
We also have about 36 acres in Chamblee that are now under development for mixed-use projects, live-work-play type projects. So the Chamber is very heavily engaged right now in how are we going to transition this Tri-Cities area, the traffic and the new people coming in, so that we can be an effective force, if you will, to support the businesses that are going to support those new endeavors that are going around. It's going to triple or quadruple the population of that area.
That's huge.
By 2015, 2016, depending when they finish the buildings.
I love that. So how do people reach out and join the Chamber, and what are the benefits of joining the Chamber if you're part of Chamblee, if your business is in Chamblee?
Well, we have a publication, you know, 10 reasons why you should join a Chamber. But what it boils down to is it's one-to-one relationship. Chambers, first and foremost, network businesses to businesses. It also provides a vehicle by which the community can or the consumer can interface with the Chamber. So what we're rolling out is first is an initiative to buy local. We have a little over 3,200 international global oriented
wow.
businesses that the buying public in the general area is not aware of. So that program will launch in about a month. The second part is where we're trying to educate and I want to say this tactfully, get the governing structures of the areas to realize that we're not sleepy little Chamblee anymore.
Okay. I like that. So how do our listeners reach out, and how do people in Chamblee sort of reach out to you guys? What's the contact?
Well, we're www.chambleecommerce.org. is our website, and there's an application online if you wish to join. We have meetings the second Tuesday and the third Thursday every month that are network business meetings that they can just walk in at any time. And then we have a full-time office in downtown at 5382 Peachtree Road, two blocks from City Hall.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you so much for being on and enlightening us about Chamblee.
Thank you.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Finn for our guest today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Business Radio.